Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, on this 14th of September 2013, as we discuss the world of sports for the next 60 minutes. 347-215-6180 is your call number for my Blog Talk Radio audience. You can find me also on the chat line as well. You can also hit me up, follow me on Twitter at William Gerald, or go to CyrilGeraldQuinn.com for any archive segments from this particular program. And certainly, it is a payback. It is payback time for the Alabama Crimson Tide, the two-time reigning defending NCAA BCS champions, as they look to exact a year's worth of revenge on Johnny Football and company as they travel down to College Station, the 12th man, to face the number 6 Texas A&M Aggies in a game that, you know, listen, everybody started talking about, you know, probably, you know, when Johnny Manziel decided to come back to college, or everybody started talking about probably right after Alabama lost to Texas A&M last year, people were talking about this game and what could possibly happen in this particular game. Certainly throughout the course of the offseason, if you go past all the nonsense that went on with Johnny Manziel, this was one of the main focuses of the offseason, and especially in the SEC. Again, two teams right now who, frankly, you don't know how good they are when you look at them. Texas A&M, I've watched both Texas A&M games prior leading up to this game. I've not been impressed with them overall at all. Obviously, offensively, they're tremendous, led by Manziel. They scored a lot of points against, you know, suspect competition, to say the least. But, you know, that defense has been extremely shaky. I mean, giving up, you know, the defense is giving up well over 400 yards total offense a game. Their run defense has been bad. I mean, teams have put points on the board against their defense. You know, you look at some of the stuff. I mean, so that is obviously a major concern as you face an Alabama team that you know is going to attempt to certainly run the football, led by, of course, T.J. Yeldon, who's one of the premier running backs in all of college football. From an Alabama perspective, they're coming off a bye week against Virginia Tech, against a decent Virginia Tech team. They had some struggles, but still won 35-10. Obviously, this is not a vintage Alabama offensive line as in comparison to some Alabama offensive lines in the past who had 2 to 3 first-round draft picks on them, especially in the past 2 to 3 years. So that certainly is a concern for Alabama. But the question is, does Texas A&M have anybody that can rush the passer on the defensive line that can get to A.J. McCarron, who comes in? You know, A.J. McCarron has a chance to finish his career as one of the most celebrated quarterbacks in college football history. Now, not in terms of his skill set, but in terms of his resume, A.J. McCarron is seeking to be a starter on a team that wins 3 national championships, 3 BCS championships. It's never happened before. So with all the Manziel talk, you know, especially in the offseason and all the unnecessary attention that he's received, A.J. McCarron is the one carrying the hardware right now, and certainly not to be overlooked. I think Alabama, you know, I think Alabama's experience in these big games helps them a lot. I mean, Alabama plays in two or three of these a year. I mean, you think about it. They play LSU every year. You got the Iron Bowl when Auburn's decent, and more times than not, they are in the SEC championship. This is old hat for Alabama. These games of the century, and that's not even counting the kickoff, some of the kickoff games they played. They played Virginia Tech twice in the last couple of years, played Michigan last year. I mean, this is nothing for them as far as the hype and everything that goes into this game. And again, remember Alabama in payback games. You saw what look what Alabama did to Florida a few years back. Well, the Tim Tebow-led Florida teams, they lost 2008. SEC Championship 31-20, came back the following year and just destroyed Florida. Again, led by Tim Tebow 32-13. You look at what happened against LSU in the 2011 season. They lose to LSU at home, and again, they outplayed LSU but couldn't make a kick in overtime at home. And then they followed that up in the BCS Championship and just dismantled LSU 21-0, where in a game where LSU didn't cross midfield until the fourth quarter. And had about under 100 yards of total offense. Then the following year, they go to LSU last year and beat LSU to complete the regular season comeback, regular season payback of the 2011 loss. So Alabama and Saban have been great. Under Saban have been great in these payback games. Hard to beat Saban 2 years in a row. It really, I mean, it's LSU, Florida has done it before. I believe LSU has done it before. It does not happen often that Nick Saban team gets beat in consecutive times. So in Texas, A&M, Alabama, the winner will have a leg up in not only getting to the SEC championship, but also the national championship. The loser will not be completely out of it. As we've seen in the past 2 years, Alabama has won the national championship with a loss. Last year against Texas A&M, and of course the year before against LSU. So this is not a all or nothing college football game. It's a huge game, a big game, but this is not certainly by any stretch of imagination not an all or nothing game. But again, whoever wins this game is going to have a major leg up in the SEC because both these teams' schedules are not that difficult. I mean, Alabama has LSU at home. Auburn's not any good this year. Tennessee's not any good. I mean, both these teams probably have one tough game left on their schedule before the SEC championship. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Serial Quarter Review. When we return, we'll have this morning's headlines coming up and much, much more coming up on the Serial Quarter Review. We'll be right back. Morning. With the baseball, Oakland taking out Texas 9-8. Oakland now has a 4.5 game lead in the division against Texas over Texas, so they're in good shape as far as taking the AL West. Texas, of course, is still amongst the leaders in the wild card, along with Tampa Bay, so they still have a chance to make the playoffs as well. Yeah, if Chicago 5-4 over Pittsburgh. Milwaukee took out Cincinnati 5-1. St. Louis edges out Seattle 2-1. St. Louis is up one game on Pittsburgh and up 3.5 games on Cincinnati. But all three of those teams are going to make the playoffs in Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, and St. Louis. Right now with the wild card, Washington, the Nets trying to make a late run, win their seven straight, taking out the Philadelphia Phillies. Nationals are 4.5 games out, playing great right now. Zimmerman has been on fire, but again, it seems like it's going to be too little too late. They are 4.5 games behind Cincinnati in the wild card, as you have St. Louis leading the division. You have Pittsburgh and Cincinnati in those wild card spots. And, of course, the NL West is basically wrapped up. I mean, the Dodgers' magic number is 4, despite losing to San Francisco last night. The Dodgers' magic number is down to 4. Baltimore over Toronto 5-3. Baltimore is still a couple games out of the wild card. Chris Davis hits home run number 50, tying Brady Anderson. I'm certainly sure that Baltimore faithful and people within their franchise want him to break that record, to wipe Brady Anderson's name from any record that any Baltimore Oriole record, considering the steroids and what happened with him. So certainly, and Davis probably just one home run shy of the team record for home runs in a season. Also joins a exclusive club in terms of Babe Ruth and Albert Bell being the only players to have 50 home runs and 40 doubles in a season. And again, if not for Miguel Cabrera, Chris Davis would be the MVP of the American League. He's been phenomenal this season. Floyd Money Mayweather, of course, fights tonight against Saul Alvarez. Saul Alvarez is 13 years his junior. For the junior middleweight championship, Floyd Mayweather, both fighters are undefeated. We'll see what happens with that. Of course, there's a pay-per-view fight because only, it's Floyd Mayweather. Floyd Mayweather is going to get $41.5 million for this fight. $41.5 million. I was reading something earlier this week about Mayweather. Maybe it might have been last week, in terms of, what exactly is his legacy as a fighter. Where does he rank in the pantheon of all-time great fighters? And I think it's an underreported story, to be honest with you, because, listen, he's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. We know how flamboyant he is. You know he talks a lot, so on and so on. But the guy is an all-time great. He literally is one of the greatest fighters of all time in any weight class. I mean, that's let's put that aside. I mean, you can knock him. The only knock you had on him in the past 4 to 5 years, 3 or 4 years, was Manny Pacquiao. And now you have to calm down with that, because Manny Pacquiao has lost twice in the last 2 years. So I think that this idea that, he was scared to fight Pacquiao, Pacquiao has been beaten soundly twice, recently. But you look at his resume. He's fought everybody else. I mean, Cotto, Mosley, De La Hoya, I know late in his career, Ricky Hatton, Gotti. Victor Ortiz. Rondo is not a great fighter, but everybody who's been, every major contender he's fought. I mean, I can't say he's been ducking guys left and right. I mean, saw this guy he's fighting tonight is undefeated. I think the guy is like 42-0, 40. Both fighters are over, have over 40 wins. I think Mayweather is 44-0. I mean, the thing that's going to hurt him when you measure him against, the all-time greats, Sugar Ray Robinson, Muhammad Ali, Joe Louis, Sugar Ray Leonard, Tommy Hearn, Burrell Duran, Marvin Hagler, unlike those guys, he did not have that iconic opponent to beat. And again, a lot of people thought that Pacquiao was going to be that opponent. It turns out, Pacquiao is not that opponent. It's not Mayweather's fault. And you can say, if you'd have fought Mayweather 5 years ago, okay. But it didn't work out. Man, you look at those fighters. I mean, you know, you had the '80s. You had Hagler and Hearns and Burrell Duran, Sugar Ray Leonard, and that whole crew of fighters. You know, Muhammad Ali had Frazier and George Foreman. You know, Sugar Ray Robinson had Jake LaMotta, and so on and so on. I mean, these historic champions, these iconic champions, have had fighters who have been on that Mount Rushmore with him as opponents. He, unfortunately for his career, hasn't had that. And that's the only knock that history will have against him. But as a fighter, the guy's one of the all-time. The guy deserves to be considered amongst the all-time greats, the greatest fighters that's ever lived, period. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we will talk about the Washington Redskins. Can they rebound from Monday night's debacle? That's coming up, and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. Out on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review, September 14th, 2013, as we discussed the world of sports. Well, that was not a song that was very popular on Monday night, as our Washington Redskins, my Washington Redskins, came out flat as a pancake against the high-octane, newly-led Chip Kelly offense that just, you know, lit them up. In particular, in the first half, before you blinked, the Redskins were down 26-7. And we were down as much as 33-7. And, I mean, made a little late run in the second half, fourth quarter, but the game was well out of reach. You never thought the Redskins were going to win that game. And just an embarrassing performance. I mean, let's be honest. You know, RG3 did not play well. I know he ended up over 300 yards passing, but again, a lot of that came in the second half. He played better as the game went along, particularly the fourth quarter. First half, he looked awful. He wasn't accurate. Was missing a ton of receivers. Had a couple bad interceptions, and I just think that the team overall. You had Alfred Morris fumble, which was a big turnover. Early in that game, you had a guy catching a punt inside his own 5-yard line. It was just a bunch of mental breakdowns by a Redskins team that man, that some, including myself, thought could be a legit Super Bowl contending team in the AFC. Now, again, I'm not going to go nuts after one game, which a lot of people in the NFL do after one game. It happens all the time. But listen, when you have a game where you're opening your season, you're at home in a division against a team that you're better than, you got to take care of business. I mean, that's all there is to it. If that game were in Philly, I would be, you know, okay, on the road, in the division, rivalry, you know, didn't know what to expect with Philadelphia, even though I hadn't seen offense before. It could be a little bit more understandable. But at home, you got to do a better job than that. And again, the Redskins, at some point, if the Redskins want to reach a level of being a championship caliber team, they've got to develop some type of killer instinct at home. I mean, nobody fears playing in FedEx Field. It's just like, RFK, the stadium would rock, fans were right on top of the field. People were scared of RFK. Visitors were coming in where it was intimidated by RFK. FedEx just does not have that aura. Now, I know the teams haven't been as good, but even there's something beyond that. I mean, first of all, and this, I'm going to knock the fans here. Stop selling your damn tickets. I mean, when Philly made a big play or scored a touchdown, it was about 20. See, it felt like, or it sounded like, it was about at least 20 or 25,000 Eagle fans there. And it happens all the time when the Redskins play somebody of prominence, whether it's Dallas, Pittsburgh, Philly, the Giants, other fans from other teams just buy up all the tickets and destroy the Redskins, any home field advantage the Redskins have. It happens all the time. It's been happening for a number of years. I mean, Monday night, you know, McCoy breaks a tackle, has a tremendous run, touchdown run, and I'm like, where are we at? Are we in Landover or are we in South Philly? I can't tell. So fans got to do a better job with that. Stop selling your tickets to the opposing team's fans. If you're going to sell your tickets, sell it to a Redskins fan. Trust me, I know there are a ton of Redskins fans who can't get into the games who would buy tickets off scalpers. Please, it's not that hard to find. They're not that hard to find. Now the Redskins, of course, face a Packer team also coming off a loss, but coming off a much more impressive loss, if there's a such thing. Much more impressive loss to the San Francisco 49ers. I said on the NFL wrap-up show last week, I thought the Packers played extremely well. They easily could have won that game. And I know Kaepernick lit them up for 400 yards passing, but the Packers' run defense was good. I thought Eddie Lacy, you know, despite only having 41 yards played, had a decent game, especially in the second half. They had the best player in football in Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, going up again, the Redskins traveling to Lambeau Field, 8-point underdogs, that's a lot of points. It's a lot of points for a team that made the playoffs last year and won 10 games. But it just shows you right now, it shows you that people around the league, and you listen, and I heard, you know, read a couple of things, listened to a couple of things, people are down on the Redskins right now. Around the league. They're down on RG3. They're down on the team in general. Some people think Redskins are in trouble. And that's reflective of the point spread. I mean, one of the games I'm going to pick today in my NFL picks, Tampa Bay and New Orleans. You think Tampa's at home. You think New Orleans would be like a 7 or 8 point favorite. They're only a 3 point favorite in that. And that's they're only a 3 point favorite over Tampa Bay. And I don't think Tampa Bay is a good team at all. That just shows you how people are feeling about the Washington Redskins being an 8-point underdog in Green Bay. Again, Green Bay, you know, you have to defend Rodgers. They don't have as many offensive weapons on the outside as they've had in past years. They have, you know, no great, but they still, again, you have Cobb. Jordy Nelson played well last week. You have Cobb, Nelson on the outside. James Jones can explode. You know, expect James Jones to be prominent in offense tomorrow. He did not have any catches against San Francisco. He will be a factor tomorrow. He will get targeted, and of course you have Jermichael Finley, who could be dangerous as well. So they still have weapons. They're gonna run the ball a little bit more than they have in the past. But most importantly, they have the number one player in the NFL in my eyes, not only quarterback but player in general, in terms of Aaron Rodgers. Again, to me, the Redskins' best defense on Rodgers is their offense. Alfred Morris has got to have a big game. The guys, they have to pick up first downs. They have to keep Rodgers off the field. You have to, the Redskins have to run the ball in this game. I'll give you a magic number. And again, that's not going to be easy to do considering that Green Bay was great against San Francisco last week. 90 yards on 34 carries did San Francisco have. So they did a tremendous job at bottling up San Francisco's run game. I think the Redskins have to get between 120 to 140 yards rushing to win that game. Cannot sit up there and let RG3 throws the ball more than 30 times, then the Redskins will not win this game. Period. Now, I do think the Redskins can make some plays against the Green Bay secondary. I don't know if Morgan Burnett is going to play, but Green Bay secondary looked awful last week for the most part. Kaepernick picked them apart. This is despite the fact that they had no Michael Crabtree or Mario Manningham. Vernon Davis, Redskins tight ends should be able to. Fred Davis should be able to. Should have a big game. Vernon Davis had a huge game last week. Pierre Garçon and some other Redskins receivers should be able to find some creases against Green Bay. They did. Now, maybe they can shore it up in a week somewhat, but they looked terrible against San Francisco as far as their secondary goes. So, Redskins, again, run the ball, take your shot, and then take your shots down the field. But the most important thing for the Redskins to do in this particular game is, to me, establish the run and establish it early in order for them to win the game. A big game for the Redskins because the schedule does not get any easier. If you fall to 0-2, you're facing the prospect of having Detroit at home. You'll get a little briefer at Oakland, but still, that's still a West Coast traveling across country. Then you have at Dallas, Chicago, at Denver. That is not easy by any stretch of imagination. It's a huge game for the Redskins. Again, that's why you have to handle business. Because look, if you won last week, this would have been not a house money game, but this would have been a game where you could afford to choke up and go 1-1 facing Oakland. Now you're looking at the prospects of being 0-2 facing Oakland. So that's what happens in the NFL when you lose games that you're supposed to win. You put yourself in compromising positions, and then you have to go out there and win games that you're probably not supposed to win. And certainly Redskins will be up against it tomorrow at Lambeau Field facing the Green Bay Packers. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll talk Breaking Bad as we gear towards the final 3 hours of one of television's greatest shows. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. 12 o'clock on this latest edition of the Cyril Gwynn Review as we discuss the world of sports. 347-215-6180. Of course, a lot of things going on this weekend in terms of the football, college, and pro. You have Floyd Mayweather fighting Saul Alvarez later on tonight. Both fighters undefeated. Of course, you'll have some NFL football tomorrow. A monster showdown tomorrow night, Seattle, San Francisco. We'll talk more about that later on in the program. A couple big time showdowns that we'll get to as far as the NFL goes. But right now, we sadly have to talk about just the 3 hours that are left in the, of course, our favorite show right now, my favorite show right now, Breaking Bad, coming off an epic episode 513. I could practice this for 10 hours. I'm going to be able to pronounce this. Tahaja Lee. And, of course, the episode left off with a shootout between Hank and Gomez against the Uncle Jack and Todd and the neo-Nazis, and faded, you know, the screen went to black with just bullets flying left and right. And, you know, listen, Hank is gone. I think there's no two ways about it. Hank is gone. He was doing the victory tour this week. He's on a ton of shows all over the place, on, you know, doing a bunch of interviews. So that, I mean, and again, you can knock them. This could be the one knock of the episode, that Hank dying was a dead giveaway because of the phone call he made to Marie. And somebody, a friend of mine, Robert Sapp, brought that up when I was speaking to him yesterday about it. And, you know, he's right. That was kind of a dead giveaway that Hank was going to die. And would you like, I mean, could they have avoided that phone call? Could they have not done that phone call? Yes, they could have not done that phone call. But it's not, overall, it's not a big deal to me, but, you know, it's a fair point if you want to say that they, you know, should do a better job of not giving away what's going to happen to Hank. But again, all the entire season, I thought that Hank was going to die. I just thought that I didn't think Hank would survive the season. I would have been surprised had he would have. One of those characters, either Hank or Jesse, was going to go. To me, it makes more sense to keep Jesse because still, you know, Jesse could be kidnapped. Jesse still has a connection with Lydia, somewhat she still knows him. It's still something, you know, Jesse could get to Walt. So there's still some things that you can do with Jesse. As far as Hank goes, I think Hank, you know, I think that was his moment, you know, arresting Walt, slapping the cuffs on him, making him do a world famous pert walk. That was Hank's moment. That was the end of his story arc, you know, finally catching up to this character, Heisenberg, this guy that he's been chasing for the better part of the last, you know, 3 seasons, you know, really, you know, even going back to season 2, to be honest with you. So I thought that was a perfect way for him to go out like that, perfect way for, in terms of him, for his character arc to end. Very interesting. The big question to me coming into this next episode, which I don't know the title of the next episode. I don't want to know the title of the next episode, to be honest with you. What are they going to do to open the episode? Are they going to open the episode continuing with the shootout, or are they going to do a flashback, or a flash forward, I should say? Remember, only 3 hours left, and they have yet to really address any of the flash forwards they've done. They've done over the course of this season and season 5A. You remember the one in season 5A, the first episode, the flash forward was Walt meeting. You know, we find out that Walt's in New Hampshire. He's having breakfast at Denny's, 52nd birthday. He gets the M60 from the gun dealer, and he has a new identity. And he has a full-grown beard. We find out that he's on the run, basically. He's on the run. So, yeah, that flashback. then you have the second flashback that came in the first episode of this particular part of the season where he goes back home. His home has been, you know, is abandoned, has been boarded up. Somebody's wrote Heisenberg inside the house. He still has the gun, of course. And neighbor can't recognize him, and he gets the rising. He gets the rising that he hid inside the, behind the outlet, within the outlet. So that needs to be addressed. One of those flashbacks or flash forwards needs to be addressed in this particular episode. And again, you only have 3 hours left. We had 3 hours left, so I really believe that will be addressed. That one of those flash forwards will be talked about, and some more light will be shed on those flash forwards in this particular episode. So again, looking forward to it. Just 3 hours left of one of the great television dramas of all time in terms of Breaking Bad, and certainly can't wait for that. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the Serial Court Review. When we come back, week number 2 in the league with no contract is guaranteed. We'll be back with NFL picks. Cowboys coming off a 5-point victory over the Giants Sunday Night Football, despite the fact that Giants had 6 turnovers. It was a very close game. Tony Romo, Dez Bryant will play, but both of them are banged up. Short week for the Dallas Cowboys. Arrowhead Stadium, even when Kansas City hasn't been good, is always a tough place to play. Kansas City is favored by 3. You know, that's the home 3 that every home team gets just about. I like the Chiefs in this game. I think the Chiefs are improved. I think that their defense, they have a lot of talent on defense. Again, I shouldn't say short week, but Sunday night game. Again, I really have to question Tony Romo and that injury. He was not the same after he sustained that injury in the first half. Again, the Chiefs are a very physical team. We'll see, you know, how he reacts to it, how he reacts. I expect Dwayne Bowe to have a big game against that Dallas secondary. Eli lit the Dallas secondary up. 450 yards passing. I like Kansas City in a close game, 23-20. I'll take Kansas City to cover, 23-20. Look for the Chiefs to improve to 2-0. Game number two, New Orleans traveling down to Tampa. And again, New Orleans favored by three. Better team, we know this. But, I looked at this game and I said, this is a classic example of 0-1 team versus 1-0 team, 0-1 team at home. New Orleans Saints, as we know, have not been the same team once they traveled, once they got outside of a dome, especially in particular the Superdome. In the division, against a team that really has no fear of them, this is my upset of the week. I like Tampa Bay. I know Tampa Bay is going through a lot right now as far as people knocking Josh Freeman. Not a happy situation with the way things have gone. But they still have some weapons. I mean, they still have Vince Jackson. Still have Mike Williams. Doug Martin. I like Tampa to pull off the upset in this game. Say 27-23. Again, New Orleans has been, over the course of the last couple of years, has been shaky outdoors on grass, outside of that dome. They're not even the same team. They've had some very, very questionable losses, even when they've been a playoff team. So I go. Again, in the division, against a team that's coming off a loss as well, I'll take Tampa Bay to upset the New Orleans Saints. Game number three, Detroit against Arizona. Detroit going down to Arizona hosting Detroit. Again, another example of a team coming off a win, traveling on a road to face a team coming off a loss. Arizona, despite the loss last week, played very well in St. Louis, came up short. We know Arizona has some talent. They are much improved at quarterback. Carson Palmer had a decent game last week. Larry Fitzgerald got back in the mix with a couple of touchdown receptions. You have Detroit traveling cross country to a place that has been a house of horrors for them. Last year against Arizona, they got embarrassed 38-10. I think this game will be much closer, but I think the result will be the same. I like Arizona to take out Detroit. Again, Detroit has not been a good road team as well outside their dome. Look for Arizona to rebound 24-17. Arizona, one of the very few teams that has a cornerback that can physically match up with Calvin Johnson and Patrick Peterson. I'd say he's going to shut down, but he can match up with them. So I'll take Arizona to the outright victory 24-17. Game number four. Manning versus Manning, Giants hosting the Denver Broncos. Now, Denver has had, Denver has had an extra 3 days off. That certainly will help them. But they do go into Giants Stadium facing an angry, angry Giant team coming off an embarrassing performance against the Cowboys. Now, despite the fact that they only lost by five in terms of how sloppy they were, they had six turnovers. David Wilson, fumbling the ball all over the place. Still, they brought in Brandon Jacobs. They really have no other options at running back but Wilson. I mean, the kid has talent. They have to play him. Expect a big performance out of the Giants. I was happy with what I saw out of Jason Pierre-Paul from a Giant perspective. He did play well. Still, Justin Tucker had a decent game. I think the Giants come out like a house on fire with this game. It'll be a very close game, but I like the Giants 33-28. Denver secondary, I think Eli Manning is going to light up the Denver secondary. They have no pass rush. They have no Champ Bailey will not play again. Denver, again, having to fly cross country. I know it's a Sunday night game, and I know they should be well rested, but again, it's still cross country against an angry New York Giant team. Reuben Randle, is a new emerging receiver for the Giants, along with now you have Randall, Victor Cruz, and also Hakeem Nicks as well. I just think this is going to be a classic case. Again, we have a case of a team under 1-0 traveling to a traveling on the road to a team coming off a loss. I expect the Giants to bounce back and win 33-28. Denver is favored in this game, but again, I expect a Giant bounce back victory. So for a week number two, you have I'll take Kansas City to cover at home, take out Dallas at home. I'll take my upset special of the week is Tampa over New Orleans. I'll take Arizona over Detroit to get their first weekend, first victory. And I'll take the Giants over the Denver Broncos to get their first victory of the season, despite the fact that Peyton Manning is coming off a 7-touchdown game. Those are your picks, my picks for week number two in the league where no contract is guaranteed. When we return, we'll talk about the showdown in Seattle on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning of the Circle Review. We'll be right back. The 12 o'clock hour in this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. Of course, the number one game on the NFL dock this weekend. It's a pretty good game this weekend. I mean, Green Bay, Washington should be very good. Giants, Denver should be very good. But the number one game has to be Seattle hosting San Francisco. Seattle right now, as currently stands, has the number one home field advantage in all football. That stadium is the loudest stadium in the NFL. They were undefeated there last season. They destroyed San Francisco last time they played, 42-13. Now, keep in mind, San Francisco was coming off a just outright battle with New England, this is where traveling comes into play, especially late in the season when you're already banged up. They had to fly, you go from San Francisco to New England, short week, and then you had to fly from New England back to the West Coast. And again, on a short week, very tough part of the schedule for San Francisco, and they paid for it. I believe Justin Smith was hurt too, as well. They paid for it. Marshawn Lynch had a big game. Seattle defense, they blocked the punt, blocked the field goal, returned for a touchdown. It was an outright avalanche. Don't think San Francisco has not forgotten about that. These are two teams that are very eerily similar. You have the two scrambling quarterbacks who can both throw from the pocket. Yeah, they have two physical running backs that can knock you around, beat you to death. Two big-time defenses, the two best defenses in football. You can flip a coin, either one, Seattle, San Francisco, 1-2, depending on the day. So San Francisco has the best front seven defensively in football. I believe Seattle has the best secondary in all of football. So a tremendous matchup. Again, we can make the case that these are the two best teams in not only the NFC, but in the entire NFL right now and playing in the same division. So a lot on the line, conference, division, and what have you in this week two matchup. Great matchup. I think, San Francisco has won five out of the last six games against Seattle. Though the game they won in San Francisco last year, 13-6, was a tough physical game. At that point, we didn't know what Seattle was at that point, but we got, you know, that was kind of like a sign of things to come for Seattle, as they did play well in that game, even in defeat. I like Seattle in the game, very close game. I would say if I give something like 21-17, 23-20, something like that. I think the offenses will have their moments. Anquan Boldin, this is a game where another San Francisco receiver is going to have to step up. Anquan Boldin will not, you know, he's going to have Richard Sherman on. We can make a case that with outside of the healthy Darrelle Revis, that Richard Sherman is the best cornerback in the NFL. So Boldin, they're going to, you know, Vernon Davis, they're going to have to go to some other guys as far as receiving goes against Seattle. Again, I think this is a toss-up matchup, toss-up as far as a matchup goes. I think these two teams will probably split the season series, and I like Seattle at home. But, again, it should be a very, very physical game. The two teams don't like each other. The two coaches don't like each other going back to college. Yeah, Harbaugh and of course, Pete Carroll, who's done a tremendous job to get Seattle to this point. Yeah, 49ers making comments about all the Seattle players who were getting caught for using PEDs. So a lot of talk going on. This might be right now, this could be the best rivalry in all the NFL right now, but should be an exciting game on Sunday night. I will probably, and this is how good Breaking Bad is, probably have to miss an hour of this game from 9 to 10 o'clock. I can't not watch Breaking Bad on Sunday. I can't wait that long. So, you know, I'll watch the first hour of the game, the first half hour of the game, just to watch the last, you know, hour and a half of the game. So I'll be able to, and I'll watch in between the commercials as well. So I will find a way to navigate it, but there's no way I can miss Breaking Bad on Sunday. So I'll probably miss an hour or so, or maybe 45 minutes or so of this game. It'll be fine, though. But, again, a tremendous game coming up in a week two of the NFL season. We'll be right back. After the 12 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review, 347-215-6180. Of course, we began the program talking about the SEC showdown between Alabama and Texas A&M. Alabama looking for revenge after a shocking 29-24 defeat at the hands of A&M last season in Tuscaloosa. And like 2011, following a home loss against an SEC opponent, Alabama followed that up with a championship, with a national championship. Again, this game has been a year in the making. This rematch, Alabama has been great in these payback games. Nick Saban has been great in these payback games as the Alabama head coach. Even when he was at LSU, he was tremendous in payback games. Hard to beat Saban twice, you know, back to back times. Texas A&M, I think coming into this matchup, I don't think either one of these teams is as good as they were last year, to be honest with you. I think Texas A&M defense is nowhere near where it was last year. They've been lit up by two suspect opponents the first couple of weeks of the season. Alabama, of course, Alabama, of course, had a bye last week, so they only played one game. And, you know, perfect time to have a bye to get 2 weeks to prepare for Johnny Manziel. So we'll see how Alabama responds to Alabama. We see how Alabama comes back after a year later against facing Manziel. Again, I think the problem for Texas A&M in this game, and the reason why I like Alabama, is because I just don't feel like they can handle Alabama's running game or Alabama's offense, for that matter. Alabama is not 3 yards in a cloud of dust. They have some talented wide receivers that can hurt you. You know, McCarron can throw for 300 yards if need be. So it's not just like they're just gonna pound away. They are a very versatile offense, and I just again, Texas A&M's defense last year was not great, but they did have some decent pass rushers, and they did, you know, they were okay. This year again, I think their defense is awful. And against a big time offense like Alabama, I think Alabama's going to be able to do whatever they want offensively. Johnny Manziel's going to have a game of his life again, just to keep Alabama, just keep Texas A&M in this particular game. I think he's going to have a very similar performance to what he did last year. Is he capable? Absolutely, no question about it. We know what he can do, throwing and running the ball. But I just think, you know, giving a whole basically off season, a year to basically prepare for this guy the second time around, I think that Saban and company will have something up their sleeve to be able to somewhat slow down Johnny Manziel. But I think, again, the difference in this game will be Alabama's offense and what they do against Texas A&M's defense, and how weak Texas A&M defense has looked against Alabama. So looking forward to it. Should be a great game. It's not an all-or-nothing game. Again, this game is in September, second weekend in September. Also, you have to again look at past history. Look how many SEC teams. Remember, SEC has won 7 straight championships, and only two of those teams have been undefeated. That's Alabama 09. That's Alabama 09 and Auburn in 2010. LSU lost two games, won a national championship. Florida lost a game, won a national championship two times. Both times that Florida lost a game, they came back to win a national championship. We've already talked about Alabama twice winning a championship, losing a game. So these teams, these SEC teams beat up. There's so many of them, and they're so highly ranked, and they beat up each other. They know how to, you know, Alabama always gets this great schedule where they don't have to play Georgia or somebody else or Florida. I mean, Alabama just, like, how they can maneuver their schedule is remarkable to me. But they always find a way to put themselves in a position to rebound coming out despite a loss, whether it's in November or October. So again, the loser of this game certainly will not be out of the mix for a national championship, especially if it's Alabama. On the road, they're already ranked number one. They're not going to drop that far in the rankings, and they'll have, you know, they have LSU, and they'll have time to catch up. But still, a huge game for both of these teams to see if Alabama again, as soon as Alabama can rebound off that shocking loss last year at the hands of Manziel and company. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. Remember, tomorrow we will have another edition of the NFL wrap-up show. We'll talk about the 1 o'clock game, talk about the Redskins game in particular, and talk about that game. And also, again, be on the lookout for another edition of the Cyril Quinn Review coming this week as we talk Breaking Bad episode 5:14. Which will, after that, will be only 2 hours of Breaking Bad left. So be on the lookout for that, for some more Cyril Quinn Review programming. Have a great weekend. So long.